Last time we talked about we talked about the theory of Rav Lichtenstein's approach to the Torah Umah, the Torah and secular wisdom and literature, and then we talked about objections to that, as well as about how Rav Lichtenstein exemplified his approach, focusing last time on his PhD on Henry Moore. Today we're going to finish up that part of things by looking at another piece of literature, an analysis of literature that Rav Lichtenstein taught in the Gush at one point. We're going to do that quickly and then move on to the topic of academic Jewish studies, which is very little published on, but is actually a pretty complex topic. So we'll try to get in both. And with that, we'll close Rav Lichtenstein's approach to both the Torah study and to secular studies. So, towards the end of his life, a few times the Yeshivat HaRetzion, the Gush, asked Rav Lichtenstein to present on various literary works to the students, not as like a formal class, but as like a one-off, a special event. So the one we're going to look at is a reading of a poem by Robert Frost. I was actually at this poem around 2008 on Tu B'Shvat, and at this reading. There were others, I think, a couple of times Rav Lichtenstein taught on Shakespearean sonnets, poetry, a different form of poetry, but we're not going to get into that. That's a little more technical. Also, that's not published in English. There's notes on it in Hebrew that exist. If someone really wants, you can, like, you know, maybe write a paper on those. But for now, we're going to look at what's been edited and published in English, as well as in Hebrew, a reading of a poem by Robert Frost, which everyone should have the handout. So Rav Lichtenstein starts with the question that really is the topic of the poem. What's the proper way to relate to an artistic creation? Right? How should we relate to art? We actually saw that a little bit, discussed a little bit in some of Rav Lichtenstein's articles, both about Torah study and about secular studies, the value of aesthetics. There's different approaches on that. And so Rav Lichtenstein says, of course, we know that the poem has a historical background. It stems from the poet's personality and experience, cultural and societal context. But all that doesn't interest us. We focus completely on the poem, the literary creation as an isolated entity. So that's one approach, to focus fully on the text in front of you, detach it from history. Conversely, many notable academics have argued that we cannot hope to understand an artistic creation without first becoming familiar with the artist's biography, psychology, and native culture. The other approach is basically to situate a poem or any literary work in its historical context. You have to understand who the author was, where they were living, what they were responding to, what they were going through in their life, and on that basis, you analyze poetry. There are strong arguments in both directions. Of course, the correct path is to find the balance between the two extremes. I think we mentioned when we talked about Rilke's approach to Talmud studies, when you have a chakira with two options, the goal is always to find a way to bring in both and find the right balance between the two. That was often Rav Lichtenstein's approach. So he says that he doesn't have time to go in detail into Robert Frost, but he mentions quickly Robert Frost lived from 1874 to 1963, and Rav Lichtenstein actually met him in 56, so that's pretty cool. He lived in Vermont, a rested, quiet, peaceful place, far removed from the noise, pollution, stress, and excitement produced by the Industrial Revolution. Frost's poetry reflects this. The distance from the city provides an opportunity to re-examine man's relations to his original natural environment. So, as you're going to see, as we'll see, the poem is situated in Robert Frost's life, as if he's the one speaking, or he's the one thinking in the poem, and it's about his life and his relationship to nature. We'll just read this quickly. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. Right, so stopping off in the middle of nowhere with snow, maybe to reflect on nature. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy winds and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. So that's the poem. We're going to see Rav Lichtenstein is going to focus on the end of it, but really he works his way through it. He says that the poem is short, its subject unexceptional, but sometimes a poem is more important for what's not written than what is written. As Rav Lichtenstein notes, Frost blatantly holds back significant information. Right, there's a bit of a scene here where the narrator is in the forest on a snowy evening, but it's not clear where he came from, where he's going. But he's stopping by the woods. So he writes, the Talmud distinguishes between two different types of stops. stop to shoulder the burden or in order to rest. Now this, of course, is fascinating. Usually Rav Lichtenstein would use literature at times to flesh out a Talmudic point or a Talmudic text. And here he's using the Talmud to flesh out a literary point, right? To emphasize that, that stopping can be one of two things. So that's just a very interesting inversion. And you know what exactly the pause is, it's not clear to the reader. But he says the scene is one of absolute human loneliness. It's bleak, it's silent, just the narrator alone, and he's in nature, separated from society. At the same time, he's thinking about whose woods they are, who owns these woods. And ownership, of course, is not a natural thing. It's a human construct, a human product. So, as Rav Lichtenstein writes, he has not wholeheartedly abandoned himself to the magical vision before him of nature. No, he comes from society and will return to it. Yet, the woods are lovely, dark, and deep. He is enchanted. So there's this tension here with this character, who we're going to assume is Frost himself, who's both from the real world and social, the social society, the industrialized world, but at the same time is enjoying the nature on this snowy evening. Right, woods are maybe less natural than the forest. They're more tame. But as he goes on in the analysis, on the flip side now, the description of the falling snow is vivid. This is Vermont, famous for its ski slopes, right? So he's placing this in Frost's own life. The falling snow, the downy flake, it's dynamic and perpetual motion. And, you know, he analyzes it a bit further and says the first three stanzas serve as an exposition for the last stanza. That's really where things come to a head. It presents a stark contrast to what comes before. Now, there's Rav Lichtenstein presents a dichotomy that Kierkegaard has between the ethical man and the aesthetic man. Right? Ethics are about really relationships between humans, largely, and doing the right thing and obligation, whereas aesthetics are about a relationship between a person and the natural world, not based on what's right and wrong, but based on what's attractive, what's beautiful. Right? The woods are lovely, dark, and deep. On the one hand, the light L sound, but also the alliterative D, stronger sounds. There's different senses here. A more light and aesthetic sense and a stronger, maybe ethical pull. Something about the woods that draws him in, encouraging him to abandon his anxious self-consciousness. Right? Where do I need to go? What do I need to do? That's ethical man. He has all these obligations in the world he needs to tend to. At the same time, nature is calling to him to slow down, to enjoy the world. Now, we're not just reading this poem. Rav Lichtenstein refers us to another side of Frost, but he wrote in a different poem. I would have written of me, for his epitaph, on my stone, I had a lover's quarrel with the world. So a lover's quarrel with the world. So he loved the world, but he had a quarrel. He wasn't quite settled in the way he viewed the world. And Rav Lichtenstein gives a bit of his history that he reflects on nature and at the same time is a political person, is always concerned with what's going on in the political world. And that's part of the tension that Frost is trying to express in this poem. So this duality, the twin poles of the aesthetic and the ethical, is reflected in our poem. But I have promises to keep. What promises? To whom have they been given? The very demand that a promise be fulfilled is an ethical assertion. Or maybe the promise is to ethics and morality itself, and to civilization. Coupled with this moral obligation is a tangible sense of fatigue. Right? He's tired. It's the evening. It's the winter. Expressed in the concluding lines, enhanced by their repetition. And miles to go before I sleep. And miles to go before I sleep. The narrator longs to resign himself, to surrender to nature. Again, this is all about reflection to nature, right? So the natural instinct is to sleep. He wants to remain there, and right? He wants to remain in nature. But the day is short, and there's much work to be done. Creativity is endless. Life is short. And yet he still longs to remain in the snow. This is the tension that the protagonist faces. And that's really the power of the poem. And now Rav Lichtenstein turns this around and says, let's apply this to the Beis Medrash. I know a few poems that express so forcefully the moral idea that binds us to the Beit Midrash, right, speaking to yeshiva students. The narrator's life would have been far simpler had he dismissed the lure of nature. What's all the fuss? Snow, ice, trees, woods? They're all worthless. We're here today, gone tomorrow. Let's get on with it. Rubbish can be dismissed without a second thought. But in order to have a lover's quarrel with the world, you must first see its value. Frost appreciated the hues and colors of the world. Though the narrator is attracted to the aesthete's passive contemplation, morality's voice within him eventually wins. So there's this tension between a person drawn to nature, on the one hand, and on the other hand, having obligations to live in the world, and that's the lover's quarrel. And that's just like a yeshiva student, or a Rosh Yeshiva, if Rav Lichtenstein's talking about himself, who on the one hand wants to just learn, to just commit themselves to that ethical obligation, and at the same time has an appreciation for the broader world, has a lover's quarrel with the world. I mean, there's all these values, you know, to see the Alps or to engage in secular studies even, and those have value, but the Torah is primary, and there's only a tension, there's only a need to balance things if you believe in both. If you believe in both aesthetics and ethics, then there's a tension. If you think that everything else in the world is meaningless, all that matters is the ethical, then there's no tension at all. And just to conclude the poem, so too it is with us. It is easy to devote yourself to Torah if you are convinced that everything else is nonsense. Nonsense is easy to give up. But one who sees the beauty in God's creation, who comes to love it, must be strong in order to devote himself to learning Torah. One must not divorce the world, but rather bear in mind one's lover's quarrel with the world. And with this, it returns to the theme at the beginning of the analysis. It is a beautiful analysis, and it began with the question, how do we view art? How do we view the aesthetic? From the perspective of we're about to analyze a poem, how do we analyze poems? And of course, it concludes with that very theme. This poem itself is about how to observe the aesthetic, how to think about what's around you, the art, the artistic, the aesthetic world around you, while you're coming at it from a different perspective. So it's really a meta, very meta moment here, right? People in yeshiva studying secular wisdom, specifically an art form of poetry, which itself talks about the nature of art, and that was analyzed too in terms of what are we studying, but also talks about the tension between one's ethical, and in this case, Torah or Talmud Torah obligations, and one's broader interests, one's aesthetic interests, and how to balance those. And that's the power of this here. So I guess there's a few things that are significant in this. First, Rav Lichtenstein overall talks in many places about having multiple obligations. He has an article, hasn't received much attention because it wasn't republished in Leaves of Faith, called To Double Business Bound, a quote from Hamlet, about being pulled in multiple directions as an Obed Hashem, learning Torah, other things. And that's an important aspect of Rav Lichtenstein's thought that really gets presented here. But I think maybe the bigger takeaway is that there's value, and I think one of the response essays pointed to this, that there's a value in using literature that can really give us insights into Torah. That's Rav Lichtenstein's whole approach of Torah and general culture, that it can give us broader insights into Torah, into ethical life, into what life is about, into humanism, and you really see that here. This poem, it's an expression of one person, Robert Frost, but what it does is it informs us and it colors for us what it means to have multiple obligations and to have these tensions and how it plays itself out. So that's something that's really an important takeaway from this poem. It's an example of how reading literature can enhance one's spirituality. And whether it's these poems that Rav Lichtenstein analyzed in yeshiva or when he taught literature during college, this is something that he did not too frequently, but several on multiple occasions, to show how literature can enhance one's avodas Hashem, not only to talk about it in theory.